Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where, with our guests, we explore the big political issues of the moment. I'm Mike Siluma, and thanks for joining us. This week, police arrested Dudu Mieni, the former chairperson of SAA and an associate of ex-president Jacob Zuma, on fraud and corruption charges. Charges arising from benefits she allegedly received from Busasa, the defunct company implicated in state capture. In this episode of the Politics Weekly, we look at the state's underwhelming track record in bringing to book individuals accused of complicity in state capture during the Jacob Zuma presidency. Our guests this time are Thando Xolojika, who's the Sunday Times investigations journalist, as well as political analyst Asanda Moshe.
You asked Mr. Ramaphosa to sit down first. I'm standing.
Now I warn you.
I need to put on my big girl panties and keep going.
You can't have two speakers standing at the same time.
Security services of the Republic of South Africa, you may intervene.
There's been several attempts on my life.
Lower that hand on
who the
president is accused of that serious crimes.
I know I'm going to become the president of this country.
You are going to be the president.
I am going to be the president
of South Africa.
Of South Africa. There's no confusion.
Of South Africa.
I will cancel race.
Corrupt people do not eat alone. They have a spider web.
I'm there. I can lead them. I'm ready to be the president of this country.
Welcome to the both of you.
Thank you.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Now, 3 years ago at the World Economic Forum, Richard Quest challenged 702's Bruce Whitfield on South Africa's progress in bringing to book those involved in state capture. Here's a snippet of how that interaction went.
In order to be taken seriously here again, we really need a big fat broom and some chains and some prison time.
Well, how many people have gone to prison so far?
Yeah, I'll get back to you on that point. On to other things.
Now, Asanda, let me start with you. Are we able to get back to Richard Quest in terms of the question he's asking? South Africa has been talking a lot about fighting corruption, fighting crime, but in particular dealing with the after effects of state capture, as in prosecuting and bringing to book perpetrators of state capture. What progress have we made since Richard Quest asked that question? Would you say 3 years ago?
Well, I mean, I think some progress has been made. There are a number of people who received money that wasn't due to them who have returned some of that money. We've seen efforts to bring back the Guptas to answer for their criminal cases. We've seen, efforts also to get them to pay. And I was reading the other day, not long ago, that there was an agreement made about, one of the payments that needed to be made. We are and have seen some progress when it comes to what looks like the beginnings of efforts when it comes to people like Edwin Sodi, although, I mean, having seen his lavish party at his lavish house, that seemed what was supposed to be under the SIU, I don't know anymore. But there has been, some conversations about some of the efforts that are taking place. We know, for instance, Brian Molefe was somebody who had to pay back some money. And so I think in terms of money, financial recovery, we're seeing some progress. In terms of beginning to ask questions around certain people and the ethics of what they did, we're seeing some progress. But of course, what we haven't seen is, I think, enough action in terms of actual arrests of some of the kingpins of these criminal activities that were done under state capture. And I think, I was just, going through the kind of reasoning that the ethics committee put forward. And I really was disappointed to find that, it's sufficient for a minister to say, oh, well, the payment wasn't for me, I was fundraising. And there doesn't seem to be an indication of having done an investigation to say, who were you fundraising for? And can we talk to those people? And can we see, their receipt of the money, or at the very least, the things they bought with that money? And so I think there's definitely a lot that needs to be done. But part of what is always going to be the problem when it comes to holding the ANC and ANC members accountable is the fact that the ANC has the majority in parliament and therefore will always rally around their own. And so What I think is going to be important is ensuring that the NPA is properly capacitated so that proper investigations are done. Because one of the issues we've seen is that cases make it all the way to court and then they get thrown out of court and some kind of are sent for further investigation, which then leads to these court cases dragging on and on, where, you know, politicians are simply just wasting our time and energy and our money, really, because the only people really making money are lawyers.
Let's just pedal back a bit. One minute, the Zondo, the advent of the Zondo Commission was like how shall I put it, a point of an inflection point, almost, you know, between the past and the new, the nine wasted years, yes, so-called, yes, and the new dawn.
Yes.
You know, where, you know, we would start to turn a page and we'd be dealing, you know, resolutely with issues of corruption, etc. Mm-hmm. Now, just very briefly, you know, the key things that Zondo recommended, you know, in terms of dealing with people who were implicated.
So, yeah. Pramak, I mean, I like the fact that you say it was a breaking point between nine wasted years and the new dawn. So the major things for me that Zondo recommended was criminal investigations, mm-hmm, and prosecution. And that is key in the sense that that is where you see repercussions. People must be taken to task. Mm-hmm. And in order for our society to function properly, there must be consequences, right? And throughout his recommendations, you will find that he says further investigations, and prosecution. So talking to the Hawks, and the NPA, and then of course there are these other recommendations that entities such as, you know, state-owned entities should also take people through disciplinary processes, but also refer, conduct their own investigations, like PRASA, further investigations, and then refer these matters to law enforcement.
And just to interrupt you, the number of recommendations for prosecutions were quite substantial. It was quite
huge.
It wasn't like five people.
It wasn't
two people or one person.
It's a major number of. It's actually a big number that includes politicians, technocrats, etc. But the unfortunate part about those recommendations is that you're recommending to institutions that were systematically broken down. Our law enforcement was systematically broken down through a number of years. The Hawks were literally captured. The NPA itself was captured. Our crime intelligence captured. So you are recommending for these things, mm-hmm, for people to be investigated and prosecuted, but who is actually going to do that? Because you still have the same investigators in the same system, mm-hmm, that was captured and broken. Mm-hmm. You know, a result of this, you see it in the one example, the Nulane case in the Free State, including the Gupta lieutenants, etc., mm-hmm, right, who played a major role in allegations of money laundering, influencing politicians to appoint certain people, right? The case goes to court, but the state is not ready. Therefore, that talks to your investigators and the kind of sound advice that they supposed to get from prosecutors to direct them. I had a privilege of sitting down with the Hawks, and they said that they've got experts, specialized teams focusing on these state capture cases. But to me, it looks like it's just a facade. They must be seen to be doing something. And I suspect that these things are deliberately just you know, not being handled properly. I mean, up until today, we're not quite sure if indeed the Guptas were actually arrested in Dubai. I mean, a simple question like that we've been asking. Nobody was able to tell us that, but we were told that certainly we are working hard bring the Guptas here. But that thing fell apart. So until we fix that broken law enforcement.
With the Gupta, because the Guptas were kind of like the, you know, in election, they would say the steering of the state capture thing. You know, they were the central characters in the thing. And the failure or inability to bring them back to South Africa. What was it our fault? Was it the fault of the UAE authorities? Because at some point, the whole thing got muddied as to who didn't do what or who did what.
Pramak, I mean, for me, we have to start from the beginning, how they actually left the country.
Mm-hmm.
They were tipped off by law enforcement, and you know, at the moment,
some people in law enforcement,
and these guys actually managed to get out of this country. How? But we were told they were put on. There was a red alert notice put out on the Guptas, so they left. This time around, my view, and from what we can you know, establish from the little evidence that we get here and there, is that we were sitting and not doing much. And then at some point now, questions are being asked, where are the Guptas? Then the Department of Justice and NPA act like they are doing something. They need to be seen that like they are doing something. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, most of the extradition requests happened only in 2022, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. So, and I mean, the commission had ended when?
Yeah.
So we are to blame.
Yeah. Asanda, I'd like for you to come in here just off the back of what Uthando Nkolo was saying about the condition of the state institutions that are supposed to investigate and prosecute and successfully prosecute, you know, hopefully. That is something that has been raised many times before to say, oh, you know, because we're saying, you know, how long has the new dawn been in existence for? You know, how long have we had a new president who is supposedly crusading against corruption, right? He's been in office for quite a while. And now the question is, at what point do we begin, while conceding that the institutions were damaged, but at what point do we begin to look forward and say and ask for results and deliverables out of these institutions and their political leadership? It looks like this can be a permanent and endless kind of open-ended excuse, you know? Even the new administration, if there should be a new administration next year, can still say, well, you know, the institutions were hollowed out, you know, it's because of state capture, because of the Guptas, etc.
You know, I think it depends on kind of maybe which side of the bed I wake up on or something like that. Because on some days I have deep empathy for Cyril Ramaphosa because what he is experiencing is literally the, you know, the boomerang from the 9 wasted years. And so, of course, it gets complicated because he's also implicated by virtue of having been the deputy president at the height of the worst of state capture. And the ANC, the whole ANC is also implicated because they sat and watched their organization become what it is now, and they didn't do you know, what was necessary to do at the time. But you know, I think for me, one of the things that kind of often strike me is that if you have 9 years of kind of a deep destruction of the state, I mean, we are talking about you know, people were literally hunting for money reserves in government everywhere they could find them. If they found money, it was child. You know, we had reports of, you know, state witness protection programs where the houses were being lived in by politicians' children, where the cars were being kind of played with by these children, and the funds that are supposed to be given to people who are under state protection were looted. So what does that mean? It means that now that we need people to become state witnesses, we don't have a place to put them. And then in the same breath, you also have, you know, the widespread destruction of the hawks, which Utan Polo spoke about, which on its own cripples us in terms of actually taking action. But further, what you have is a deeply ineffective, inefficient, and almost to extent non-existent forensic capacity in this country. And what that means is that even the evidence that you've collected, it wasn't necessarily collected using the right procedures. And then when it wasn't necessarily kept in the condition that it needs to be kept in. And then when it wasn't recorded in the way that it's supposed to, you know, and you can see how this kind of plays itself out almost into perpetuity. So what is interesting, however, that has happened is that you've got the business entities which have come and said they will help the state to build capacity, for instance, to build forensic capacity. And, you know, on the one hand, I jumped around for joy when I heard this. And then on the other hand, I remembered that, you know, apartheid state capture gave us the Bruderbond, which literally were businesses and continue to be businesses that are in operation today. And so I don't know how much in bed with business we want to be, while at the same time, I think it's important for business in South Africa to be involved in solving the problems of South Africa, because oftentimes they are also part of the problem. And I think, you know, it's important for us to continue to ask difficult questions of politicians and politics. But it's also equally important for us to constantly ask questions of, you know, in a corruption case, there are two people. Mm-hmm. You have the corruptor and the corrupted. And so we need to ask questions equally as tough on the corruptors, but also on the corrupted. And so, for instance, firms like McKinsey, firms like, KPMG. You know, all these, the law firms that were implicated, the accountants, accounting firms that were implicated, and so many others, which, you know, the UK MP, for instance, you know, was very successful in kind of getting Bain to be held accountable at an international level. Yeah, so we need to essentially have this multi-pronged approach. But I also think, yes, it's natural that we are getting impatient, but we also need to understand that, you know, unfortunately, when your system is completely broken, that was literally the entire point of the thing. You break state's capacity, and then you know that you can, you know, eat all the money that you want, and it's going to be, you know, almost impossible for the state to chase you. So we kind of are going to have to build somewhere, somehow, some patience, because this is literally walking in the lines of the desires of those who captured the state. And I even almost want to say, I think that, you know, while I often say we need the ANC to go, I also think we need by the time the ANC goes, can they please clean up a lot of the mess that they made so that it doesn't become somebody else's
I guess,
kind of impossible task.
And the operative word there will be can, whether they are able, even if they wanted to, you know, kind of thing. But the other thing, Asanda, you know, and I'll ask you to join in as well here, this whole state capture, hollowing out of institutions, etc. Does it not risk giving people like, and I want us to talk about them and their performance, people like Shamila Batoyi, Godfrey Libeya, Peggy Cele, doesn't it give them a get out of jail free card that they can always say, no? In other words, we're not even beginning to judge their performance when actually clearly there is no progress in what they're supposed to be doing. You know, the ANC likes to talk about consequence management. So how come there doesn't seem to be consequence management for people like that? You know, that we almost go around them to say, no, it's not their fault because they inherited this damaged thing. But once, I mean, someone has been in office, say, for 3 years, for four years, for 5 years, surely we should begin to ask questions of their performance in terms of dealing with the task that they've been given. Asanda?
I mean, I think that you do need, I think we, I'm not by any chance suggesting that we shouldn't be holding people accountable for non-action. I think we can, I think we should. And as I've said, I think the ANC created this problem and they need to be at the forefront of dealing with it. But, you know, as you've mentioned, one of the issues we have is that the NEC, the current NEC of the ANC, called a number of key individuals who were mentioned in state capture in the Zondo Commission. And so what are the chances that, you know, the leadership of the organization that is implicated is going to lead its own arrest, is going to lead its own investigation, and is going to lead its own kind of eradication in order to really fight corruption. I don't think that, you know, it's possible, but I do still hold the hope and of the possibility of at least some of the work being done. Because as I said, I fear that if this work is left to a new political party, South Africa will never be able to kind of get out of this quagmire that we are in. Because you must remember that, and I always even have to constantly remind myself that the depth of the destruction is so deep that I even believe we haven't even begun to understand its fullness. So Zondo Commission was almost like, you know, we're seeing the iceberg, but we haven't seen kind of the rot that sits at the bottom and its implications for South Africa as a country and South Africa's systems. And so we have to on some level continue to demand from the current government and the ANC as a political party that they clean up the mess that they started. And also, I think it's a good instructional point for political parties that want to hold power to understand that if you don't have a hold on your people, and if you kind of look away, you run the risk of not only destroying your political party, but destroying the country, and therefore decreasing your chances of ever being in government again. Because I really believe that if the ANC had not been, you know, in state capture, chances are we wouldn't even have platforms to be able to talk and critique ANC to the extent that we have, because, you know, they were doing quite well in the main before, you know, we had the state capture. So corruption has always been there, but corruption is also, unfortunately, it's a global byproduct of the political system. And until we figured out better systems, we're going to continue to deal with it. And I want to, you know, I find sometimes when we talk about corruption, we can get to a very depressing place. So I want to just remind all of us that the fact that we got to a Zondo Commission, the fact that we have documented evidence of how states are stolen and how states are stolen, particularly in South Africa, the fact that we have a better understanding and are able to map where things can go wrong, this is good and this is important for us, because it means that we will be able to make better laws in the future. In the same way that, as much as I dread and I really wish and hope we had never had a Zuma presidency, there's also a small part of me that says perhaps not having had Zuma for as long as we did, but maybe Zuma was important for our young democracy to be able to understand that just because you've had president who had ethics before, it doesn't mean you always have them. And so able to correct even constitutionally, you know, the assumptions that we're making about the president and their capacity to hold office and their capacity to be true to the oath that they have actually, you know, signed up for.
Now, you wanted to come in.
I actually said, I think, Uasanda is making a very important point. At some point, I did think of it that, thank God that we had 2007 and it happened to test our democracy, to test our constitution, right? But, you know, to move from that, this is a lesson for us and for our future. But there's one other element that is so dangerous for our democracy, and which, you know, when people talk about state capture, right, we're looking at just at the politicians, the ANC, you know, the faces that we see. But the real problem, it's the foxes in charge of the hen house. The officials in either state-owned entities or in government who are, you know, who collude with business to actually take taxpayers' money. We've got no political affiliation or political interest. So you can get rid of ANC, you know, bring in a new party to run government. They would still be in the system. And that is where the problem is. And that is where we need a working law enforcement. And as Uzana was talking, I was thinking, and I've been thinking about this thing. Right now, we've had this broken system, right? Law enforcement. But within that, we started a new directorate, the investigating directorate mm-hmm. under the NPA, which was now a new entity that is going to deal with these major corruption cases.
Yeah.
This is the institution that should be working. This institution has got new people. It's supposed to have top of the crop mm-hmm. investigators, mm-hmm. forensic investigators. It yeah. should be capacitated, right? Because these are new people who we can assume hated what
yeah.
was happening, you know, in the previous years. But you also have people with skills who are coming from the Auditor General of South Africa, right? Who were assisting the Zondo Commission. They were seconded into this directorate. It's the only directorate that I think should be capacitated
yeah.
to set and funded to a point that we know it operates solely independently of the NPA and the Hawks itself, because the Hawks keeps on saying, no, but the ID is investigating. We've referred yeah. everything to the ID. And then you go to the ID says, but we don't have funding.
Mm.
So if we are serious, let's build this this directorate or start a completely new directorate that has new people who have not been in this kind of system and essentially being captured as well. But I've got hope that, you know, if you fund such institutions and if we've got civil society pushing hard and business people also pushing hard. But there's a gray area about business as well. I mean, I think Asanda spoke about it, right? Because they also contributed to estate capture.
Yeah.
So we need a law enforcement institution that is new, and I think let's capacitate investigating directorate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, hey, Asanda, I just want to go back to the you know, we were talking about the possibility of a new government coming in and President Ramaphosa going away, whatever, you know, and you know, and unless what do they say in the unlikely, the ANC yes. people would say in the unlikely event, he has to go away. What would he have to show? Because he came in on a ticket of fighting corruption. Now he's going to be facing the electorate next year. What is he going to say to them? Because, I mean, you're saying you prefer that the ANC cleans up after itself before it goes, but they've got 6 months or less to do that. So what is he going to say when he goes out to the electorate on the issue of corruption?
I mean, I think that, you know, if we consider where we were 3 years ago, although, I mean, I emphasize that it's not enough progress. I think there's been some progress, as I've mentioned, you know. We have seen some of the money come back. We have seen, you know, some attempts to hold some people accountable. We need to see more of you know, the real arrests. And I hope that some of them are coming at least in the next 6 months. But I do think that, you know, there is a lot that has been, you know, that has been done also in terms of trying to rebuild the state's capacity, like the Hawks. And if you look at some of the work that's happening in terms of crimes that we almost had begun to pretend like we can't solve, like, you know, the cash in transit heist. If you see the kind of action that we see in terms of cash in transit heist, you see that there is a state, you know, police system that is doing its best at this point to try and show itself to be effective. So, of course, we don't want to become, you know, a South America where as soon as you are suspected to be guilty, you are killed.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was quite encouraged to see that, for instance, there was a cash in transit and within a few hours, the police had captured and arrested the people who were said to be, you know, behind it. And so there are some gains. And I think, you know, for me, one thing I always say to people, to South Africans, to people in general, is that It's really important as South Africans who can and are able and have a passport to just go spend some time in another country. And you will come back appreciating South Africa a lot more. Because although as a country we have many problems, and the ANC is of course at the heart of many of those problems, our history is at the heart of many of those problems. And as we've discussed here, business and the lack of ethics in business also is at the heart of those problems. We are still a viable country. We are still a country that still, to this day, I stand on this, has potential to come out of this mess. We are also in a weird kind of way lucky, because there is a global economic crisis at this point. And so globally, everybody is complaining about everything. And globally, everybody is having a miserable time. And one of the things that, you know, one of the worst things that happened to Cyril Ramaphosa, but also one of the best things that's happened to him, is that he governed at the time of Corona, which was almost a reset for many people. And, you know, work that he's done in terms of things like BRICS, for example, and finally expanding it and making sure that, you know, the conversations that are happening are galloping towards important actions with global implications. These are the things that I think are going to be important for determining whether the ANC is going to be able to win, even if by a whisker over 50% or not. And I think, you know, also at the same time, I always kind of challenge myself to say, we also need to, as middle class and the chattering classes, as I sometimes call them, we also need to kind of listen to people on the ground. And although, you know, at an intellectual level, people do need to be talking about corruption and its implications, etc., people are more concerned with how hungry they are. People are more concerned with the fact that they don't have jobs. People are more concerned with the fact that, you know, there isn't service delivery. And so there is this balance that the ANC needs to do of spending a lot of time and effort chasing criminals and getting them to book and putting them in jail, but also making sure that service delivery is not compromised and that things move and that people feel like their everyday lives are not kind of ground to a halt, because we're failing to implement the state capture recommendations. And of course, making sure that, as Thando Xolo very articulately put, that it's all good and well for us to kind of get rid of the ANC, but if we don't talk about business and the role that business play and the corruptors, we also will come, will have a new government that will have the same problem. And so we need to constantly be having this conversation with the nuance that it deserves and with the balance that it deserves, rather than, you know, what I sometimes feel is kind of the screaming about, you know, the corruption, as if we don't understand the complications of it.
Tom Golo, the last word will go to you, because we have just about run out of time.
All right.
Now, you have observed very closely the likes of Godfrey Lebeya, Shamila Batoi, and the work that they have been doing. You know, and I'm gonna you know take bets, you know, between you and Asanda. You've got Dudumieni in, you know, appearing in court. You've got Matela Koko. You've got Brian Molefe and company appearing somewhere else.
Absolutely,
kind of thing. For the longest time, they're going in and out and in and out. What are the prospects of, given the, what you outlined earlier about the cases that basically went pear shaped? What are the prospects of these ongoing cases actually ending in convictions?
Pramak, I mean, you know, for me, having had conversations with Advocate Lebeya, a committed policeman, a clean policeman, you know, who wants results. I think, you know, his management style, you know, also delayed his investigators from conducting themselves in a way that is deserving of a law enforcement officer. The Dudumieni case, for example, when you look at it, it's smaller amounts, right? It's 200 and on all of that. That for me is actually a smart move. And whoever, if it's NPA that advised them, you don't have to charge a person for stealing a billion, right?
Yeah.
In order for you to make a point.
Yeah.
A billion might actually carry the same sentence as a 200K corruption.
Mm-hmm.
So at times, I think also challenges have been about law enforcement officers trying to, you know, to eat the whole,
to do too much,
to do too much.
Yeah.
Can't you, all you need to do, you charge a person with a lesser charge, right, or lesser amount,
because the kind of Al Capone kind of thing.
Yes.
You don't charge the guy for murders and stuff, for other things,
for like other things. And this is how the FBI actually wrote the book when it came to dealing with mafias.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for me, this is where the frustration was. It looked like, they would be complaining about not having enough forensic experts. That is absolutely fine. You go and you look for them. They've asked for money. They've been given for money. They don't have to, do the big money cases. Because once you get to court, the only thing that you have to prove is to prove that this person, benefited unduly, and the charge is corruption.
Yeah.
Whether it's 200,000 rand or it's 1 million, eventually the sentence would be the same. The only thing that you need people to see, that the lesson we want to teach South Africans, there are consequences for your actions. Because the reason that people become so brazen and behave the way that Edwin Sodi behaves, right, is that I'm untouchable.
Yeah.
Nothing can happen to me. And once you have that kind of society, then you've got people everywhere, even from the lowest strata, feeling brazen as well.
Yeah, because the tone has been set at the top.
The tone has been set at the top. And this is what has destroyed our municipalities.
Yeah.
So for me, the Dudumian part for me was saying, this is actually a smart move.
Mm-hmm.
The Matela Koko situation as well, for me, they're focusing on one case, right? Mm-hmm. Focus on just one case. Don't focus on too many cases.
Mm-hmm.
So there seems to be some kind of a change in terms of the approach.
Yeah.
Because that was the problem with trying to get the Guptas for everything and everyone else. Mm-hmm. You charge them with too many things. When are you ever going to complete your investigations?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's all the time we have on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly for this week. Unfortunately, time is always against us. I'd like to thank our guests, political analyst Asanda Mwasheng, as well as Thando Kolo Jiga, who's the Sunday Times Investigations journalist. We appreciate your time. I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, do stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.